Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to talk about MSU's end of the season with a 85-69 loss to North Carolina in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Before we talk about the game, a quick word of thanks to Terry Mort with a one-time gift to the show via Venmo with a message of Go Green! Go White, Terry! Unfortunately, didn't work out today. We really appreciate the support. If you'd like to support the show and help keep us on the air, head on over to tffinots.com/support to find the links for one-time gifts or recurring gifts. Well, Rod, the game certainly started out great. Michigan State looked a lot like they did in the first round against Mississippi State, where they seemed to be following the game plan, played a stingy defense, forcing North Carolina into a lot of multiple uncomfortable possessions. The lead actually swelled out to 12, and then the wheels came off, and then the bus careened over the side of a cliff, and the Spartans found themselves down 9 at halftime after multiple turnovers, missed shots, missed defensive assignments, hostile crowd. They managed to whittle the lead down to 4 in the second half, but the Tar Heels pushed it back up to 12 and eventually 16. And Michigan State once again turned the ball over and missed some open cutting shooters and just had the same breakdowns they had in that first with the first Carolina run in the first half.
Well, I think it's a simple story. And it's one we've been talking about in some way, shape, or form for 4 years, but especially this year.
Yeah.
Point guard play. If you have it, you're in good shape. If you don't, you're not. And today, Michigan State got, and I'm saying this knowingly and assuming this is his last game, doesn't make me feel good to have to say it, but you gotta tell the truth. A.J. Hogard was horrendous.
Yeah.
He was terrible. He was terrible in every respect. And unfortunately for Michigan State, unlike some games this year, Trey Holloman was not able to answer the bell in relief of AJ because he too really struggled.
Yeah.
And when you talk about that first half segment where the last 8 minutes or so where it went from up 12 to down 9, the defense was not great during that stretch either, but I attribute most of that to offensive stagnation and specifically Michigan State's inability to respond to North Carolina upping their defensive pressure. If you watched closely, you would have seen over that last 8 minutes, North Carolina, both on ball and off ball, were in the face of every Michigan State player they were guarding. And so you have, as a team, you have a choice to respond to that or not. Michigan State didn't respond to it. Guards were not tough with the ball. I mean, 11 turnovers is not a crazy high number.
No.
But let's also remember, as we talked about, North Carolina is not a team that generates a lot of them.
Right.
So there was a big gap in turnovers we had talked about. We'll get to it when we talk to the keys. We'll get back to it. It had to go the other way, and it didn't. Carolina got much more off turnovers than the reverse. But during that segment of the game, that's where I really felt Michigan State didn't respond to Carolina's response.
Yeah.
Because Carolina got down and they responded. They came out and their whole tenor of their defensive approach shifted. And Michigan State didn't respond well to it. In the second half, I did like the way Michigan State battled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the score is a little flattering to North Carolina, in my view. That was not a 16-point game. But Michigan State just couldn't. They got it down to, they got it as close as 2, actually, in the second half. Jaden Akins had an
right,
he converted. It was a 2-point game. And then they got it to 4 several times after that, but they just couldn't get over the hump. Some of that was defense. I did not think that Michigan State handled its doubling as well. There was one egregious mistake by A.J. Hogarth on a baseline cutter at that kind of a critical moment that got Carolina an easy basket. But, you know, credit to North Carolina, too. You know, we've talked about with Zach Edey how ugly it is to watch him play.
Yeah.
I do not think it's ugly to watch Armando Bacot play.
No.
Because Armando Bacot showed you that probably the single biggest weapon he has, I mean, he's a very good low post player, good rebounder, capable defender, all of those things. But, man, he can pass. He finds people out of doubles. And to their credit, Carolina had guys, you know, Harrison Ingram, a career day shooting the three. He's a he's a solid 3-point shooter, but he's never made 5 in a game.
Yeah.
Before. They got the benefit of, you know, RJ Davis, Banks won.
Mm-hmm.
Barnes had one kick up, kind of bounce in the air and fall. He had another one that went around the world about 5 times before it dropped. Now look, I'm not saying that to knock North Carolina was lucky. No, that's what can happen when you're basically in a home court environment as they were. And that can happen when you're playing well. You tend to get breaks. And so, but those things happen. I'm not disappointed with Michigan State's effort. I think a lot of the effort stuff that you wanted to see was there. They really did a nice job on the glass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Carolina tattoos people on the glass. Michigan State was the better rebounding team today.
Yes.
I thought Michigan State, especially early, actually got some things done in the post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And ironically, given the general tenor of how the season's gone, if I have a criticism of the playing groups, I might say that Mahdi didn't play enough. Because I thought he really, of all those guys, I thought he held up the best at both ends. And so they got some stuff from him. Kohler had a bucket. You know, they did some decent, those guys did some decent things, but again, none of them were going to handle Bacot one-on-one. And unlike what we saw against Mississippi State, in this game, Michigan State's doubling did not do anything to knock Carolina off stride. I mean, Bacot was just picking out shooters and then guys hit open shots.
Yeah.
So it's a bad spot to be in because when you're in that circumstance, then you're reduced to just hoping guys miss open shots. And sometimes that happens. Didn't happen enough today for Michigan State to win. So
yeah, their rotations were better the first half. I mean, they whatever it was, they really weren't even open shots for the most part outside of Cadeau, who just, you know, eventually stopped shooting the threes.
Yeah, that was
close on.
I'll tell you something on that point. I was really thinking when that game was tight in the second half that North Carolina might look back at that and really have a problem with the way Elliott Cadeau played because he did not play smart basketball.
No.
That's not what he made a couple of plays here and there, but I think he was 0 for 4 from 3.
Yeah, he was.
He should never take 4. I don't care how open he is.
Yeah, well, he was definitely open.
That's a sign of an immature player, which he is. And that may yet come back to be a problem for Carolina in this tournament. I mean, if I'm Hubert Davis, I'm grabbing him and say, never again. Never again. Doesn't matter how open you are. You can't take 4 threes. That's a turnover.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, it was, you know, this season has been, it was a promising preseason. Plenty of reason to be optimistic with the backcourt coming back. You know, good freshman class coming in. Then that shocking 1-for-20 performance against James Madison, loss at home to start the season, which was a bit of a precursor of things to come for the season, just the up and down guard play, 1-4 in the Big Ten, battling up just enough to get into the Big Ten, and then showing times at certain games where they looked like world beaters, Baylor, even Mississippi State game, just the previous game, and the inability to follow up games and be consistent is, you know, well, I mean, that will be the legacy of the the A.J. Hogard era, I suppose, because I cannot imagine any circumstance in which he returns to the team. We're not going to speculate too much about, we're not going to go through rosters. We'll do that later in a future episode. But for now, I think it's fair to say this is probably the end of that. And we're just, the keys will be handed over to someone else. Wow. And I was really disappointed. 7 minutes left in the game, and he just, his body language is so bad. It just bothered me that he sort of had quit.
Wasn't 7 minutes left. It was a whole game.
Well, okay.
It was the whole game, because in the first half, during that stretch where Carolina erased the lead and established a lead of their own, there was a lot of the same stuff, blaming,
you're right,
all game long. I don't want to have to spend too much time talking about this, but I'm telling you, the thought that was running through my head when this game was basically decided, even before that, was if this is it, the silver lining here is
this is
Michigan
it.
State basketball can firmly turn the page.
Yeah.
And it becomes somebody else's, like, the rest of those veterans, man, Malik Hall played his ass off.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Malik Hall was great. Tyson Walker played his ass off. I could criticize Tyson in that stretch in the first half where Carolina took control for not being more aggressive in terms of trying to get some shot opportunities. But you know what? That also falls on the point guard, too,
yeah,
to some extent. So it's not even all Tyson. But Tyson Walker played his ass off. Those two guys did their legacies proud with the way they ended their careers. And we know definitively they're done.
Yeah.
I just, enough, man, over.
Yeah. Well, and
thank
I think,
God,
and I
don't have to watch it anymore.
I think Akins was, played a really good game too. I know he wasn't perfect.
He struggled from the floor. You know, it's 4 for 12 from the floor, which is, you'd hope for a little better shooting game out of him. But I will say this, he had 4 boards, so he competed there.
Yep.
He was 2 for 4 from three. The thing that makes Jaden's game seem better than it was from an offensive standpoint is he had a flurry.
Yeah, right. Those,
where he scored 9 points very quickly. It got Michigan State back into the game. In fact, mm-hmm, the last point he scored was a free throw that cut the lead to 2.
Right.
And you felt like, okay, maybe they've been, and then it just didn't happen from there. But he wasn't the biggest problem.
No.
And as I say, it wasn't even just the 1 for 10 from the floor. It's 4 assists, 3 turnovers, lackadaisical defensive play, but worst of all, as you were zeroing in on, body language and
just
all
leadership.
The same,
yeah,
that we've been talking about forever and ever. It showed up again, like this guy, adversity. He just kind of, what he had shown at certain points in his career was you could never firmly count him out. Like if Michigan State somehow had another game to play,
right,
next week,
he could be great next game. Yeah,
I would say there was a decent chance he'd play well. He definitely had a tendency for doing that. But within games, if he was struggling early, that was it, man. You could just pretty much put him on ice. And unfortunately, as I said, the thing that compounded it was Trey Holloman, who I've been really happy with this year, just couldn't get anything done. 0 assists, 3 turnovers. That's not like him.
No.
Only 1 for 2 from the floor. And honestly, especially when they tried to play him in the second half, they just couldn't.
Couldn't
get any offensive flow.
Yeah.
With him running the show, they struggled there. So they didn't have that other answer. I'm not down on Trey. I think Trey's got a bright future. You know, the biggest thing to me is this, and again, we're going to have lots of time to talk about referendums on the season and where they go from here. And we don't even know the answers to all of that yet,
yeah,
because we got a long, it's just the start of roster season.
Yeah, right.
But what I want to see from Michigan State and what I think there's a reasonable chance to expect next year is if nothing else, I want to see the return of a Spartan dog.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see the return of that kind of toughness and grit and visible leadership. Jeremy Fears, assuming health, I think is exactly that kind of guy. I think Trey Hollum is that kind of kid.
Yeah, Carr.
And as Carr maybe, and we'll see about the freshman. I have a good feeling about Jace Richardson for one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about Tang and McCullough. And obviously we don't know who else they may add, but I do feel like there's the potential for that to get better. And I think it's something that has to happen because with that, you tend to get rid of some of this roller coaster that we've had over the last few years, you know, where it's, they look like world beaters one day and then, you know, can't get out of their own way the next. If you have that kind of grit and toughness and leadership, those kind of players and those kind of teams tend to find a way, even when things aren't going well, when shots aren't falling, you know, they find a way. And this year's team, in the end, I think we can ultimately conclude now that it's over, did not have that trait sufficiently.
Yeah.
You know?
No, there's no question. I mean, there's plenty of games, yeah.
This game is a good prime example.
Yeah, right.
Look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, they did respond once. They responded in the second half to get it back, but then when Carolina hit them with another body blow, they couldn't respond to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, again, that's just that nebulous leadership, or as you mentioned, sort of that toughness or whatever it is that just didn't have this season, and that's usually embodied by the point guard at Michigan State, and that wasn't there.
You know it when you see
yeah,
it.
Right,
and
exactly.
By the way, they don't all have to be Mateen Cleaves or Travis Walton or Draymond Green. I mean, Cassius Winston was that kind of player that I'm talking about, that he didn't let himself get taken out of games. He didn't play with wild inconsistency. He certainly didn't look to blame anybody.
No.
On the floor with him. There was it's accountability.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's accountability maybe more than anything.
Yeah.
And I do think that is Jeremy Fears. And I do think that is Trey Holloman. And I hope that there'll be some others that can come along in that regard. But if, you know, with all the stuff about what needs to change, and, oh, they need a five who could score, and they need a big wing, and all this other, yeah, that stuff's all fine. And sure, those things will weigh in too. But, man, to me, the biggest thing I want to see change after the last few years, really, is I want a mentality that gets back, a game-in, game-out approach that gets back to what made this program what it is. And you see a game like today, and you know very clearly, if you're a Michigan State fan who's been watching long enough, you know very clearly that was missing. You know, and that's one of the reasons why they lost this game, is that.
All right, well, let's go through different segments. We're going to start with the Brothers of Justice Gutters. We had 6 inches of snow the other day. It's melted today almost completely, which is crazy. So my gutter has been working overtime. So I imagine yours are as well, if they're not working out properly. The Brothers of Just Two Gutters, located in both the east side and the west side of the state, can take care of those problems and make sure that they go away forever. They can take care of your downspouts, your gutters, put leaf guards on, whatever you need done. Check them out. They will do fantastic work, quick, meticulous. And you can find them at our support page at thefinalfours.theschedule.com/support. 10% off, you mentioned Final Four, when you get your estimate from either Kurt or Greg. All right, so the player that Michigan State needed to keep in the gutter was R.J. Davis, which we admitted beforehand was unlikely, just hopefully so he doesn't go wild. He was 7 for 15, 3 for 7 for 3, finished with 20 points, had a steal, 3 turnovers, a rebound. You know, he didn't like single-handedly destroy Michigan State, I think. He didn't.
No.
I don't feel like he controlled the game. He wasn't the difference that caused the huge, you know, that caused the loss, I didn't think. So it wasn't a win in Michigan State's standpoint, but I think it wasn't like a huge, you know, he wouldn't take over. He wasn't a failure. I don't know.
They didn't. Yeah. He basically did what he does.
Yeah. He's his average
20
self.
Points. He was ever so slightly below his average per game. 3 for 7 from three. That's kind of the shooter that he is. 7 for 15 overall from the floor. He had 4 free throws, so he didn't limit the line. But as you say, and I would agree, he didn't dominate the game either.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought MSU did a credible job against him. Not great,
but not a disaster. And I think, honestly, the difference maker for me in this game, I mean, you could say it's Ingram scoring 17 and 5 of 7 from 3. That's something you don't necessarily expect. But to me, the guy that the whole thing turned on was Armando Bacot.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the best player on the floor for long stretches of this game. And, you know, he only had 3 assists. I thought he was worth a hell of a lot more than that.
Well, I think he was, when he didn't score, he was dishing for easy buckets too. So I think,
yeah. Well, that's what I mean. He only had 3 assists. I felt he was more impactful than that suggests in terms of generating offensive opportunities for others.
Yeah.
I thought he was just really, really good, played under control. He also had, well, they only credited him with 2 blocks, but I thought he was more impactful than that even suggests defensively. Just their bigs in general. I mean, Ingram obviously is a big, had a huge day. Jalen Washington, 4 points, 3 rebounds in 7 minutes, I thought was really good.
Yeah.
You know, in limited minutes. Withers gave him a little bit, poor. Their bigs in general, but Bacot in particular, were really the difference makers.
Yeah, and I think Jim Jackson mentioned during the broadcast, one of the big differences with Mid-Carolina is that even on the switches, when the Michigan State guards got switched onto, they still couldn't capitalize on it.
Yeah,
and I don't
absolutely.
Know if that, and I don't know if that was a reflection of a couple blocks at the basket that was causing problems. So people, they felt like they had to shoot. I'm not sure, but I mean, they were very athletic, obviously long, so made it difficult.
Well, I think that really the choice of Michigan State was left with it, unfortunately, they didn't execute very often, is sometimes in those isolations, the right choice is to take a jumper. You know?
Yeah.
You use your dribble to create space and get a look. And they kept trying to go at Carolina. And normally I'm all for that. You know, you want to be aggressive. But Carolina had, yeah, their bigs really moved their feet well. They reacted well to guys trying to blow by them.
Yep.
Didn't unnecessarily put Michigan State at the line and give them cheap points. Yeah, just both ends, I thought they were, but Bacot in particular.
Yeah, I mean, really, they had 6 blocks in the game. I mean, they were really good, I mean, just the team in general. All right, so then the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. If you need clean glass, they're the place to call. So you want to find them at our support page. They also can wash your house, do power washing, which, you know, it is this season to start getting things cleaned up, maybe for your graduation party, whatever it is. Give them a call. You can find the connection page at our support page. Again, that's tfffinouts.com/support. 15% off, you mentioned Rebound, while you contact them for the estimate. They've done great work on my house, and I think they're fantastic work, and they can do any job, small or large. They can take care of it, and so want to reach out to them for sure. And so you had a 1.5-point lead, and then it didn't even really matter what happened today, since it's the last game of the season.
No, it was 1.5.
Yeah,
right?
I said you had a 1.5-point lead. Yeah,
so 1.5.
Yeah,
okay.
So it didn't matter what happened to this. And you had Malik Hall. He finished with 9 rebounds. He led the team in rebounds. The second was actually Booker, surprisingly, but Booker got quite a few minutes, which I think, you know, for all those talking about all the different combinations and problems with the team earlier, this, whether it's Booker or Kohler, all this, it didn't really matter, right? I think we saw all the players out there today, and it was still came down to the same fundamental problem that was the problem earlier in the season. So, but anyway,
that was not. But here's the thing on that front, and I'll gladly accept my trophy, but the problem with that was, especially in the second half, the lineup Michigan State went with was Booker and Hall together. So what that
right,
meant was
yeah.
You had Malik Hall guarding Bacot. Now, shockingly to me, Carolina really didn't seem to go that hard at the Bacot-Hall matchup, which I don't understand. But they didn't. So Michigan State kind of got away with that a little bit. But look, there were moments. There were a couple of moments on defensive boards. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Book had 5 rebounds. That's how
he
there
missed
were a couple
like 3 or 4.
Where
but yeah,
he was there to get a board, couldn't get it. You know, it's look. Assuming that he's back, this should be a learning experience for him. And I think the lesson to learn is you got a lot of potential, a ton to work with, but physically and mentally, he's got a lot of work to do over this offseason to become the kind of reliable player. Honestly, I think a guy that could be a model for him is a guy he was playing against a little bit today, Jalen Washington.
Yeah.
You know, we talked in the pregame about Jalen Washington's injury troubles the last 2 years. So he's a year older than Book, but they're both from Indiana. I would be shocked if they don't know each other, if they've never played against each other before. But Jalen Washington has gotten stronger, clearly, because I remember what he looked like in high school. He's stronger now. And he just played a really sound floor game. That's what, I mean, Book's got, look, you saw it in this game at times. The ability to impact what's going on with his skill set and his length and athleticism, his physical tools, is immense. It's immense. I mean, there's a reason he was ranked where he was, and that's it. But, you know, you also see the flaws pop up when you put him in a high-level game for extended minutes. You see what can happen here. And, you know, so it's something to chalk up and try to learn from. I get why Michigan State was doing it. I think they felt like they had to find ways to find some offense.
Yeah, they needed scoring
that
yeah.
stretch. And it worked for a while.
Yeah.
That lineup did produce some points and keep them in that, you know, 5 to 7 point range they were bouncing around in. But long term, that just was not that lineup was not going to be able to hang because you just didn't have a physical answer for Baycott.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the great thing about Xavier Booker right now, assuming he's on the team next year, which I guess we can't make the assumptions anymore, but I feel like the light, whatever went on this year. And I think he's at least from an effort standpoint,
yes.
Right. It's the one thing I think you could say, well, he certainly has deficiencies. He misses assignments, things like that. Those are things that are correctable. Those are not like flogging out.
Absolutely.
I don't feel like we've got a Marcus Bingham, you know, where a guy where you're just like waiting for him to sort of kind of figure things out. I feel like he's.
No.
Right.
No.
So that sense, I think there's way, way, way more potential. And you'll see why he was a 5-star. I think next year, I think there's every reason to think he's going to be a much, much improved player next year, especially on the defensive end, and probably the offensive end too, and what he's going to bring as far as, you know, being able to find his spots.
Look at that second bucket he scored, where he kind of got himself from the middle of the
lane
and hit. That was a nice play. Look,
we've never seen that. That was the first time.
But I've talked about this. Like when you look at guys like Dawson Garcia or Coleman Hawkins. Those are versions of what Xavier Booker can be, except I think he might even have a little more of a high-end gear available to him than those guys have.
Yeah.
But that he absolutely has it in him. When the whole picture comes into place, he can face people up. He can take them to the rim. He can obviously hit jumpers. We know that. And as he continues to get stronger, I think he can make plays around the basket too. So I do think you made an important point that I would definitely agree with. I think that the stuff we saw early, you know, if you looked at this game, was there a moment that you ever felt like, man, he's just not playing hard? I didn't think so.
No.
I think he's changed that.
Yeah.
He's figured out something, not the whole way, but he's figured out something about the kind of motor he needs to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's real progress. He has gotten stronger. That's real progress. There have been definite, tangible, obvious steps that have been taken. I don't think that he was in a position to have done anything close to this in November and December.
No way.
I think it took him going through what he went through to get him there. That stuff doesn't just happen. And so credit to him, credit to the coaching staff, I think, for going at this the right way. And assuming that he's back, I think that we can look forward to much, much more in the way of sustained production out of Xavier Booker.
Yeah, I mean, assuming everything goes the way we'd expect, which, I have no reason to think that this team can't compete for Big Ten title next year. You know, it's just gonna be different pieces. We'll have to see how they all fit together. But
I mean, that part I can't even begin to think about, because
We just don't know.
We don't know who's on the team.
The only thing, one thing, well, and the rest of the league, too.
Right, yeah, yeah.
We don't know who's, you know, we know Zach Edey's gone, so that changes a lot at the top. But beyond that, you know, who the hell can tell?
Yeah, exactly.
So we got a long way to go. I mean, it's the one merciful thing is I believe the portal period is 15 days shorter this year than last. I think it's 30 days rather than 45. So we should know some things sooner, but the next month, man, the next month, it's going to be wild, and not just in Michigan State, everywhere, and we'll see what happens. But right now, yeah, my thinking is just if Michigan State retains its own guys as expected, you can start to think about what that looks like, and that's really about it.
Yep. Yeah, I do agree with Graham Couch in this instance that I think the portal should not open until after the NCAA tournament is done. I think this is kind of ridiculous that you have guys, you know,
absolutely.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
Absolutely.
For multiple reasons. All right, so let's move on to five keys to the game brought to you by Nudge Printing, who provide the prizes for our bracket challenge, which I think when I last looked, my wife was actually beating pretty much everybody, she actually had fallen back a little bit, but so she's like one of the top 10 for when I last looked. And I think, and Gabe actually from Nudge Printing, who I sort of was, you know, razzing on, he was top, I think he was like sixth, fifth. Now I'm guessing he probably had Michigan State going all the way through. So in that case, this loss will probably hurt him, unfortunately. So I would much rather have the loss and, lose the bracket challenge and have Michigan State advance. So unfortunately, I got this one right, but I'd much rather not. So check out Nudge Printing stuff. This fantastic apparel. We promote it all the time here, the longest sponsor, but it really is really good stuff. And they great service, and you can't go wrong with the product. So you can find it at nudgeprinting.com, 20% off. You type in Final Four as one word at checkout. All right, so the first key of the game was the boards. Michigan State actually out-rebounded North Carolina 37-32. They had an offensive rebounding rate of 18%. North Carolina had a 16% offensive rebounding rate, which was pretty amazing. Yeah. On the stats I'm looking at, I don't see second chance points. I can't imagine there's much difference.
It was 2 for Michigan State, 10 for Carolina.
Oh, that's a big difference.
So
yeah,
that was a big difference. But that aside, I can't be upset about the job Michigan State did on the glass. This was, as we talked about, both ends of the court, an elite rebounding team. That's Carolina's right there with Purdue. And it's one thing that this team definitively changed about itself down the stretch. And part of it was that they tended to be going against good rebounding opponents.
Yeah.
Which they had sort of held up their end against those kind of teams throughout the season, or a lot of the season. It was the lesser rebounding teams that they really struggled with. But be that as it may, MSU absolutely did the job it needed to do rebounding the ball. I understand Carolina is credited for 10 second chance points. I didn't feel that was any kind of difference maker in this game. I really didn't. I thought the turnover difference was more impactful than that.
Yeah, I think so too. Although I do think they got a couple of those second chance points in that run. Once Michigan State cut a two, they had a couple, like two straight possessions, like 3 and a 2. I'm like, oh, it was back at 7 before you knew it.
You're right.
Well, the next key of the game, of course, is turnovers. Not a huge turnover problem for Michigan State with 11, but with North Carolina having 5. And a lot of those turnovers were like live ball ones that North Carolina's got running. And it certainly just came in a flurry. And at times, and then, you know, Holloman had a couple he just threw into the stands. He missed another lob, wide open lob. He just really struggled these two games in the tournament. It was just too bad.
Yeah, and you know, again, for him as a young player, first time he's really been in a position where they were asking this much of him. It's unfortunate, but I've seen enough of who Trey Holloman is and have gotten an idea of what his mentality is that I'm not worried about that. I think he will learn the right lessons from that, and we'll see him come back next year. And look, he had a really good season.
Yeah.
He had a season to be happy with and proud of, and I think definitely something to build on for next year. But today, he wasn't there. You know, again, you can look at it and say, well, 11 turnovers isn't crazy bad, and it's not. But North Carolina isn't a heavy ball pressure team. Now, I will say, especially during that stretch of the last 8 minutes of the first half, they absolutely were applying maximum pressure, although it was more, I would describe it as more denial-oriented than really trying to force mistakes.
Sure.
You know, which there is a little bit of a difference there. But, and we knew that Carolina was a team that valued the ball itself very, very well. So what the hope was is that Michigan State, being a team that causes more mistakes by opponents, way more than Carolina does, that that would give MSU the edge, and it did not happen. MSU only had 3 steals in this game. Carolina ended up with
5. Yeah.
So not a huge difference, but again, Michigan State needed to be on the plus side of that. The biggest difference was points off turnovers. MSU had 7, Carolina had 16.
Yeah.
So a 9-point differential there. Again, we talked about the pregame. That needed to be flipped. That needed to be an area where Michigan State had a distinct edge, and it just didn't happen.
And so the third key to the game was transition. Michigan State got some done in transition, but not much. And I feel like even when they had opportunities, they had blocks at the rim. I mean, the stat line that stands out the most is AJ Hogarth was 1 for 10 from the field, which now that wasn't all transition, but
most of it was him.
He had 1 3, and
unfortunately,
then 8 missed field goals in twos.
0 for 8 from 2, yeah. And I'll bet 5 or 6 of those were layups.
Oh, sure.
Carolina between Baycott and Trimble, their guard, who made a couple of really impressive defensive plays in this game. Give them credit. But if you're A.J. Hogarth and that's the strength of your game, You got to do something there, man. You got to convert. I don't care who's on the other end. You got to use your body to create enough space to convert, or you at the very least got to draw contact. Now, we've talked about it at different points this year where, you know, I think for whatever reason, he doesn't always get quite the benefit of the doubt on foul calls that he should. And this game, the officials let them play.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
I thought it was officiated pretty well.
It was. I don't have major complaints,
yeah.
And I don't think AJ had a lot to cry about. I'm just saying they weren't gifting him opportunities, so it's on him to convert. The fast break points were 9-9.
Yeah.
I actually think both of these teams did a pretty good job keeping the other out of transition. There wasn't a ton. It seemed like when it happened both ways that it came in flurries.
Yeah.
You know, came 2 or 3 possessions in a row, they might be able to get into transition, and then you wouldn't see it again for, you know, 15 minutes. So, again, not an edge, not a big surprise. I you hope that somehow you can carve out an edge there, but it's always going to be tough to be a better transition team than Carolina. What you're hoping for is that you can be more or less even. And MSU was.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was a huge difference.
So the fourth key to the game was the threes. Michigan State was 6 of 16 for 37.5%, which is, you know, average. North Carolina was 10 for 26 for 38.5%. So they had a definite edge there. I felt their threes, generally speaking, were more open in the sense that they had a lot less contested, especially in the second half. Like Cormac, Ryan got open for a number of them that were just blown assignments, I think, really.
You know, it's a funny thing, though. So I'm looking at something. Carolina, not a huge game in terms of ball movement. 28 made field goals. They had 12 assists.
Yeah.
So a little under 50%. But Michigan State.
I know. Six.
Six assists on 26 made field goals. That has to be a season low. It's got to be right there.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I give Carolina's defense some of the credit for that. I thought they, after those first 10, 12 minutes, they played very well defensively. Give them some credit, but it's never all the defense. And if you've got the guards that Michigan State believes it has,
you got to be, Izzo said it apparently coming out of the halftime break. He was absolutely right. Those last 8 minutes of the first half, MSU got stagnant, yep. Just stagnant.
Well, we talked about all season.
It's what I'm talking about, too, in terms of how you respond. So Carolina is pressing up. They're playing extreme ball denial on the perimeter. What do you do? Well, you back cut. You physically handle that and fight through it. You set better screens to free guys up. There's a lot of things you could do, and MSU didn't do them. Instead, it was a lot of dribbleitis on the perimeter, and before you know it, you're late in the shot clock and you're putting up a bad shot out of necessity. So that was definitely a problem. There's no two ways about it.
All right, and the fourth key to the game was history. Michigan State was 0-5 in tournament games to North Carolina, and they've now moved to 0-6 with a game that, again, you know, it was there were certainly opportunities to be successful in this game. They kind of blew the early one, and then later they just weren't able to capitalize when they got it tight.
Well, here's the thing. I made this comment on the Spartan Mag board, and after watching that game, I will stand by it. North Carolina is a better team than Michigan State this year for one main reason. You could talk about they've got Baycott. We don't have a player like that. Okay, but in a macro sense, they are a better team. They had Baycott last year. They didn't make the tournament.
Right.
So they are a better team than Michigan State, primarily, in my opinion, because they have been more consistent and play closer to their ceiling. I do not believe, as I have in some other Michigan State North Carolina matchups in the past, I did not believe in this game that there was a substantial edge for North Carolina in terms of talent.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, as that term, which is tortured by most people, but usually, let's accept for the sake of discussion, that it would usually is meant by that is some combination of skill set and athleticism. Okay, that's what we usually mean by saying a guy's talented.
Right.
Either he's a talented shooter because he shoots well, or he's a good passer, or he's an exceptional athlete. You know, that's what we're normally talking about. I do not think that objectively there's a big gap. I actually think you can make a case that Michigan State's backcourt from a talent perspective, is better than North Carolina's. R.J. Davis obviously can play with anybody, but there's not a world of difference between he and Tyson Walker.
Right, I agree.
And the other two spots, I'm sorry, Michigan State has more talented, quote-unquote, players. But that doesn't matter because your talent has to play to its potential. And that did not happen for Michigan State enough today. We talked about A.J., we talked about Trey, even, as I say, Jaden, outside of that one, like, two-minute flurry, really didn't have a great game.
Yeah.
Michigan State really had two guys play very, very well, and that was it. And so that lack of consistency, that lack of ability to regularly find something near your best, which we saw on Thursday from MSU, mm-hmm. we didn't see today for 40 minutes. We saw it for maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's not enough. And that's why North Carolina is a one seed with a chance to go to a Final Four, and who knows what they do. And why Michigan, in a year where I don't think there are any great teams, and Michigan State, who's done in the round of 32, was a 9 seed. That's the difference. Not talent. North Carolina's had teams. I thought the 09 team is as good a team as I've seen
oh
in college
gosh,
basketball
yeah.
in the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
That team, as good as Michigan State was good enough to probably win the national title 50% of the time, I'd say, with that team they had that year. But they weren't even close to Carolina. That's how good Carolina was. Was there a talent gap that year? Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably so. 05, maybe less of one, but maybe a little bit there too. In the 98 Sweet 16, absolutely there was. So there have been years where it's been clear. This, in my opinion, was not one of them. It's just one team is able to more regularly access something near its best. And that's enough.
Yeah, it's not like this is a team full of NBA players that they were going up against like they did.
Right. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, R.J. Davis is probably going to get a shot.
Bacot probably will get a shot, but I don't know that I believe that he's got a long-term NBA future. Honestly, if I think about it.
I mean, Michigan State might have the only NBA player if you think Booker might have a chance, right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. There's not a lot of obvious NBA talent on that Carolina roster, which is unusual to say about that program.
Yeah.
But it really is true. I think Davis and Bacot will certainly get opportunities, and Ingram might eventually as well. But, yeah, it's not obvious. That's kind of what I mean.
Yeah.
But, again, 0-6 now. Lifetime, Michigan State against Carolina in the tournament. It's been it's hard to believe that it's been since 2009. Since
I feel like they run into them all the time, but it's Duke that I'm always thinking that they run into.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem to be North Carolina. Yeah, yeah.
And you know the thing that you hope would counter this was Tom Izzo's second day of a weekend. He now falls to 24-8, which is only a 750 winning percentage in those games, which is still phenomenal. He couldn't get his 18th win as a lower seed. I thought Michigan State, I'll say this, man, those first 12 minutes.
They look like the better
Michigan
team.
Michigan State looked really well. They looked really well prepared.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
I think they were really well prepared. And then, you know, some of the other stuff kind of set in and we got what we got. But, the Carolina mystique wins out.
Yeah, the Carolina run.
It also helped, too. Let's be straight about it. That's a road game. And we've seen Michigan State have the benefit of that at times over the years.
Yeah.
And Carolina has some insane record in games. I want to say it's like, I heard the stat, and forgive me if I've got it wrong. I want to say it was something like 32-2 lifetime in NCAA tournament games played in North Carolina. Some crazy number.
Yeah.
So obviously, and you saw that in that first half when they got back into it, made their run, the crowd was obviously with them. And I think their team fed off that a little bit. But, you know, hats off to them. They earned that. They earned the right to play that game there. And
yep.
So, you know, that's the way it goes.
That's why you play the regular season. That's why you want to be a top seed, so you have an opportunity to better seeding, better locations, and better opponents that you know, better matchups. Any final thoughts about this game or the season in general, or should we just get out of here?
Well, we're gonna have lots of time to do an autopsy on this, and we will. And obviously, I expect there to be lots of news flying around in the days and weeks ahead. We're, you know, the remainder of March and then April is going to be a very busy time, and so I'm sure we'll be back with you many times over the course of that period. But, you know, I guess my bottom line, I don't know how you feel about it, but, you know, I had hope and I had optimism that if we could get something near their best, they were capable of winning this game. And
sure.
I actually still think that was true.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
It just didn't, they didn't get their best for 40 minutes. Expectations got readjusted so long ago that there have been many years where it felt a lot worse than this, you know?
Yeah.
Last year, it felt a lot worse than this because they were so close, obviously a level further in the Sweet 16. But, you know, that team at the time, looking at the way that tournament was unfolding, and the way MSU was playing, I legitimately felt they could win it. They could go ahead and steal a title in a year where you didn't necessarily expect that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one didn't feel that way to me. It was, and as the game wore on in the second half and Carolina kind of made their final push, there was just sort of an air of inevitability to it. Like, yep, you know, the things that have been problems for a lot of this season, you know, when things have gone badly, they were problems today.
Yeah.
And so they got what they deserved. And as I said a while ago, my big hope here is that apart from all the other changes most people you see on social media, what have you, obsess about, my big hope is that we see a transformation or return is a better way to put it, back to being a program that we recognize.
Yeah.
Which means one that every game, win or lose, we're not sitting here talking about why were they just dead
energy-wise for 20 minutes. Why isn't somebody grabbing the rest of his team by the scruff of the neck and dragging them across the finish line? You know, why are they getting out-toughed by somebody, which happens sometimes this year? Not lately, but it happened earlier in the season for sure.
Yeah.
And we've talked about these things on many occasions, not just this year, but this era is, unfortunately, those are the things. There were some fun. There were some highlights. You know, last year's run of the Sweet 16 was fun. You know, they did some things that were, it's not all negative, but, you know, that's right. I mean, I think for all of us, that's going to be when you think about this era of Spartan basketball, it's not going to be one that stacks up with most of what's come the last quarter century, you know? And it's for those reasons. It's because they lacked that kind of grit and consistency, not just in terms of performance, but consistency in terms of toughness and mindset and will, you know, all those things that have characterized MSU basketball under Tom Izzo. The program has not had as much of lately, and I think at some point you just have to realize the only way around that is you have a page turn and the bodies wearing the uniforms change.
Yeah.
Well, and you hope that you get more of that.
It's changing culture
as we go forward.
Right. I mean, that, and you know, we always talk about culture, and that's one of the advantages of having a longstanding program. You got a coach that's been there a long time, and you have a way you play, an identity. And there are times when, for whatever reason, just things just don't work out. The one thing I would say that I feel similarly, I mean, I'm much more invested in the ups and downs of the season as part of the show than I have ever been in the past, for the last 2 years. So it has been a little bit harder, I think, to get during the regular season.
Well,
it never used to bother me as much, losing a game here or there. I'm like, well, it'll be okay. Now it's like, oh, it's just because then I want to
respond to that.
Okay.
Because I completely 100% agree with that. And I'm not poor me. We do this because we choose to, obviously, right? But despite how it might sound on the couple of occasions this year where I got a little angry.
Really?
it's not something I enjoy. And I absolutely do not like the thought of having to do this after a loss. It's not fun.
No.
You know? And that's not, I'm not, you know, I hate this kind of poor me and stuff and you know, well, I just don't, you know, the Michigan fan base's response to their basketball program, you know, getting set back centuries this year. Are they still playing? I'm in this for life because I believe me, prior to the last 25 years, I saw a lot of things that made this season look great by comparison. I've seen that.
Oh yeah.
So, but it isn't fun to do that. And I am not someone, honestly, we would do those episodes, those couple where I got a little bit angrier than normal. And it wasn't cathartic.
No.
I didn't feel better after having done it, which I gather some people do. I don't.
No.
So it's not fun. I hope, but again, I can, the part that's so frustrating about it is if it's just a loss, okay, they lose games, you know? That's not the end of the world. It's the kind of stuff we were just talking about that you really feel like, listen, there needs to be new voices leading that room. And in college, the only way that happens, well, in any, even professionally.
Sure, yeah.
Sometimes the only way that happens is if people leave and that creates space for others to fill. I mean, that absolutely happened. That team that won the Big Ten went to the Sweet 16 in 2012, Draymond Green's senior year. Draymond Green always had leadership abilities, but he had guys who were older than him. And his junior year, those guys were still around.
Mm-hmm.
And that created an environment that didn't work. And Draymond, you know, you look back at it now and you think, well, how could he not
take control of that, being the kind of personality he is. But it's not that simple, especially when you're talking about guys who are in college. He needed that the space to clear for that to happen. I think Cassius Winston, not that it was the same deal. I think that guys like Miles Bridges and Josh Langford, to an extent Nick Ward, I don't think they were problems. But I just think for Cassius to become Cassius, there needed to be some space created for him to turn into that. Mm-hmm. And then he did, right? You know, we'll see. My hope is that what we see next year with presumably Jeremy Fears in a much, much larger role is something akin to when Travis Walton arrived. And there was a change. Michigan State, even though that previous group had had some success, they had reached one Final Four, they also had a very disappointing 05-06 season with Bo Ager and Shannon Brown and Paul Davis. You know, that team was like this one, preseason, huge expectations, and they didn't come close.
Yeah.
Right? Travis Walton, among other people, but it started with Travis Walton, comes in, and immediately there's a culture change. You know, and that team, that era, eventually ended up in a national title game and two straight Final Fours. So I had really, if you want to link it with Draymond Green, it's three Big Ten titles with that group.
Uh-huh.
So, and it all started with Travis. So I'm hopeful that they've got some guys already on the team. And again, we'll see. I like what I know about Jace Richardson. I think he could potentially be another guy like that. And hopefully that changes that element of it. And we see some other guys that kind of rise to the, you mentioned Cohen Carr, maybe as he matures, you know, he can become a guy like that. But, that's the hope at least.
Yeah. Well, you know, in general, I am optimistic ish person, and, I'm very hopeful for next year. I think there's every reason to think that Tom Izzo's run is not done. And I know some people are foolish who say that, well, he's, you know, fading away. I see no signs of that. I've seen no signs of in his mannerisms or the way he conducts his business, the way he coaches, the veracity of his recruiting and the ability to get good personnel and people, you know, into the building. So, this does not feel like when I was there at the end of the Iowa Hawkeyes, you know, Hayden Fry era, you could definitely see the dwindles.
No.
This is not a D'Antonio dwindles. This is not anything like that. Now, I don't think that, unless, you know, maybe Izzo coaches in the 15 years or something like that, at this point, there's no signs of that sort of happening. So in that sense, I think Michigan State fans have every reason to be optimistic and hopeful that they're going to see some better times. And I think, you know, competing for Big Ten championships and those things are absolutely in the future. There's no reason to think they're not. You know, we don't know, as you said, with rosters and exactly how they're constructed and how they will look when they get on the court. But there's every reason to think that things are going to be better. There's no reason to think that this is a sign of, you know, a fade away.
We don't know the answer to that yet, but I would say it's probably got to start with missing tournaments, and that hasn't happened yet. But again, I'm excited for next year, not because I think it's likely to be a team that's a national title contender. You just never know in today's game, but just how they play, how it feels. That's a big deal. And if, man, this is why I spent so much time this year talking about how the obsessions of a lot of Michigan State fans, in my opinion, were distractions. And it was all there if you were paying attention today.
Yep.
All of it. If you don't have the right kind of leadership at the most critical position on the floor, it's hard to compete at a high level. It's just that simple. And we had reason to think that Michigan State would have that this year. And the fact is, on a consistent basis, at least, they did not.
Yeah.
Period.
Well, what I'd love to see, and I felt like you saw with Cassius Winston, I think you've seen it many times in the past at Michigan State, is a joy to be playing basketball. And I felt like many times this season, even when things were going well, they just wasn't a lot of joy. Like sort of what you see with the Tominaga, right? Like there's just an infectious joy of being out on the court and playing. Now, you know, Nebraska flamed out, whatever. But you know what I mean? There's just that sort of that sort of sense of elation and jubilation to be out there in the court, which is infectious. And hopefully we see it again. I think we will, but we'll have to see. I think we get out of here now. That's probably plenty of time postmortem for this, for the NCAA tournament and the season. We'll come back with a breakdown of the season, breakdown of the Big Ten. But we're gonna take a little time off, but we'll be back. And we'll, if you have ideas for content you want us to try and do over the summer, more than happy. We'll try and stay in a semi-regular schedule until we get to the Big Ten preview shows. So if you got interviews and things like that, we'll probably try and get, I mean, I don't know, we'll try and keep getting big names on if we can, people who are smart in the field to get ideas of where the college basketball game is going, especially with how, you know, topsy-turvy it is, maybe the addition of the four more teams to the Big Ten. I feel like our Big Ten preview shows are going to have to start in like July now with 18 teams.
Yeah. You got a good point.
Maybe next week we need to start out.
I hadn't thought about that until just this second.
If this conference gets any bigger, I know we probably have to start in February for what's going to happen next year. I don't know. So
yeah,
it's going to be, it'd be fun. What Rod and I are saying is we do enjoy the show. We like doing it. We have fun. We enjoy providing that content. I mean, I always appreciate it as a fan knowing what's going on and having a better idea of appreciation for strategy and sort of, and the, you know, who to watch in the game. And so I hopefully you've gotten that out of this show. We appreciate all the support, all those you've supported us on a recurring basis, and those who listen and share it. It really means a ton to us, but we're going to enjoy spring. I'm going to enjoy spring break and, visit our sponsors. They're fantastic people who support the show, and they're really great Spartans. That's Troy over at Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids, the Brothers Gutters, Kurt and Greg, and then also Nudge Printing and Gabe and his wife, Brittany. So until next time, the Final Four, unfortunately, is not on the schedule. Go Green.